Herzlich willkommen zu Mein Element, dem Podcast vom Lützebäuer Journal und Zusammenarbeit mit dem Fonds National de la Recherche.
It's so evident that we have bigger problems than everything else, you know, and we're still talking about minor things compared to climate change and global warming. I think I'm demanding, like, I demand a lot from myself. Because I know that if I don't give the maximum I can, I will surely not be satisfied with myself. I adopted Julio. Okay, I promised myself not to talk about Julio today.
Und nochmal herzlich willkommen zu Mein Element. Mein Name ist Max. Und heute geht es Droit, Finanzen, X-Men und Julio. Ich war Besuch beim Bianca Nalbandian. Und wir schaut gefragt tun, wie hat sein Berufgeber bei einer Party erklären, und hat sich ein bisschen schwerer gedacht, aber am besten die lauscht dich jetzt selber an.
Well, I'm not very good at describing my jobs at parties, I would say, but I would say that my job is awesome, because it allows me to research what I like researching, because you might have a job that, you know, allows you to research, but then the choice you have are limited. And in my job, I don't have this limit, to a certain extent, of course. And it allows me to deepen the knowledge I have already on the subjects that I like. It gives me time to do that. It gives me the possibility to write, which I really like doing. Also doing it here at Max Planck at the University of Luxembourg, it's pretty cool because you meet a lot of people from all over the world with different experiences, researching different subjects. So it's not something like you get bored of easily, you know? So I don't know whether this exhausts your question, but I would describe it like this, at least at the party.
Bianca forscht am Bereich vom Droit und hat vor allem am Finanzbereich von der EU gemischt mit ein bisschen Klimapolitik an einer ganz kleinen Prise Geopolitik. Sein genau Thema ist aber so abstrakt, dass ich es nicht wirklich kann zusammenfassen. Und wir sind auch dankbar, dass hat ein kleines Beispiel dabei hat, für mir zu erklären, was hat dann den ganzen Tag über so mischt.
Well, you know, if I give you a practical example, if a private fund acquires the national champion of a country that is in the field of energy, for instance, you might have some problems because a foreign private investors, you might have a problem because you lose a little bit control over that entity. As a government, I would say, I would think that. But think about a sovereign-owned entity that acquires your national champion, you know, and maybe that sovereign entity is from a country that with which you don't have such very cool diplomatical ties, let's say. Or even if you have, you know, a nice relationship with that country, still is another government, is another sovereign power, is another, it's realpolitik in a way, you know. So, and this is why several states, European Union, it's not the only reason why, of course, but there might be domestic laws tackling sovereign entities whenever they are, you know, acquire shares in companies in strategic sector of that economy of that country. I'm not sure if this is clear.
So, like, if, for example, hypothetical. China would buy in.
Yeah,
into
I didn't want to say China, but yeah.
China would buy in into, I don't know, Luxembourgish energy companies, so that they could regulate and say, no, we shut everything down because we are the owners.
Yeah.
In the worst case.
Okay, that would be, you know, the kind of, yes, Armageddon scenario. But, you know, even just knowing information like related to that company, that market, that country might be something sensible for a state, a government. So you might not want to have a foreign government knowing certain things. Mm-hmm. Even just that, cybersecurity is another problem, competition in general. So without going to the extent of, you know, warfare, of having warfare, I would say that there are certain sectors in which a private investor might be more welcome than a foreign sovereign investors. And that's what I am interested in, knowing what are the instances when this, you know, there is the shift, because normally sovereign investors are investors, so they're welcomed as, you know, every other type of investor. But there are, like, and with climate change, this is changing, you know, once were military sectors, and now we're talking about water security, food security, agriculture. So sectors that you wouldn't think about when you, you know, research in this field, then you understand that climate change is really changing everything, even warfare. So economic warfare. So I would say that this is a bit what I started with when I came across sovereign wealth funds and state-owned enterprises. So it's a mix of, I would say, strict legal research with a little bit of geopolitics and social political sciences.
And what do your non-lawyer or research friends say about your job?
I don't think they know what I do. Like, yeah, like, I mean, I think because I explained this many times, but I don't think I have a single friend knowing my PhD. Because when I say sovereign wealth funds, they're all like with googly eyes, like, wow, what is this? Like, James Bond? No, not really. And one told me, ah, you should apply for the Secret Services. I was like, what? No, I think you didn't. Maybe it's me, but I don't think they really got what I do. They know that I am always with books and I write and I, you know, sometimes I send them my stuff, but I don't think they read it. So I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. Sometimes I'm frightened. This is my family. Like, they say that I live in Brussels and I work for the European Commission. I'm like, what? What? No, this is not what I do. This is not where I live. Yeah, maybe their threshold of, you know, attention is really low, but yeah, I don't know what they say because I don't think they know. They understood.
To be fair, you moved a lot in the last years, so it's hard to keep on track.
Yeah. It's amazing. Like, I had someone writing me like, oh, how's Brussels? I'm not in Brussels. Like, yeah, your aunt told me that you're in Brussels. I'm not in Brussels. Just, I'm not.
Also ich weiß nicht, aber seit meinem Geheimagent so bist du random gewesen. Am Anfang genau das, was ein Geheimagent den Gay... Nee, komm. Den Weg gehen wir nicht. Wir schwärzen zu leben darüber, wie dem Bianca sein Weg bis jetzt war. Nämlich, es hat geboren abgewusst zu Rom und dort hat er noch angefangen mit studieren. Und zwar International Law. Danach kriegte er ein Stipendium und als er sein Himmel rausgeplündert, für zu Amsterdam und Holland sein Studium weiterzuführen. Oder, wie hat es seht?
At a certain point, if you want to do international law, I think you should move and go somewhere where you have an international environment.
Danach hat er dann angefangen, an einer italienischen Etude als Advokatin zu arbeiten. Bis er dann für sich herausgefunden hat, dass ihm das gar nicht so gefällt, anders lieber geht weiter forschen. Wie es dann darum ging, ein PhD anzufangen, hat sich Bianca decidiert, ob ihn neu zu plündern. Aber so ganz lang der Schwall auch nicht bei ihm.
Well, I was chosen by Luxembourg, I would say.
Luxembourg chose me.
Yeah. It was kind of the other way around because I applied for a position and I was lucky enough to get it. Actually, it was a fun story because I applied to the University of Luxembourg and to the PhD track with supervised by Hélène Ritz-Fabry, Professor Ritz-Fabry, who's one of the directors of Max Planck. But I didn't really connect the dots, you know. I didn't know that Max Planck and the university, the law school, are in the same building. I didn't. So when I received the green light, it was from MPI. And then I was like, what did I do? Like, did I do something wrong? Like, I thought it was the university. And then it was not until I came here that I understood the dynamics. But it was a bit like, what? What is going on here? I thought at a certain point that I made two applications, and I was like, no, it might happen, you know, and that when you apply to positions, you don't apply just to one position. You apply to many positions. And then I completely, you know, I thought, okay, I messed up and I applied to some other position, but no.
But it's great that you still traveled here to check.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Instead of writing an email.
Yeah.
No, so, no, yeah, I mean, well, okay, this is my fate
okay,
now.
Okay, you know, I was like, okay. No, no, it was a bit scary because when I arrived, I was like, okay, what's going on here? And then I was like, okay. No, it was just, you know, me not getting the dynamics of MPA, because I am a PhD candidate at the university, but I'm a researcher at Max Planck, so it's a double position. So it was even better for me, but I didn't got that aspect. So yeah, I would say that it was Luxembourg choosing me rather than, but then, I mean, I came here and I have to be honest, apart from, you know, the weather, you have to get used to the weather. Yeah. And high pricing and renting, that's another thing. Apart from that, I mean, I liked it because it's if you're doing research, okay, if you're 21, you might be a little bit thrown off because you don't have much, you know, if you come from Milano or from Paris. But if you're doing a PhD at a later stage, you're more mature and you're not searching for a vida loca, let's say, and you might appreciate some aspects of Luxembourg that might go under the radar, you know, if you're not willing to see them. I loved being in the nature, like to have the possibility to, you know, switch off and go for a walk and even, you know, drive 1 hour and be in the Ardennes or whatever. I mean, that I loved. And I also like it's quiet, to be honest. Maybe I'm getting old, but I like it here. I mean, so as far as the cliches go, I would say that the weather is what was impacting me. But since I lived already in the Netherlands, I would say the Netherlands weather is worst. So, okay, I accepted it. You know, if you don't fight it and you accept it, it's gonna be okay.
Wenn ihr zu Lützburg lebt, da geht ihr noch mal der Zeit mal der pur, ja, nennen wir sie lokale Gepflogenheiten konfrontiert, die ihr eventuell nicht so kennt, wenn ihr sein Leben lang an einer Metropole gelebt habt. Zum Beispiel spezielle Regeln, die es halt so gehen, wenn ihr solche pelzige Mordbewohner sieht.
I have a Spanish cat. I adopt because this is one weird thing about Luxembourg. There are no stray cats. I mean, everywhere in the world you can find a stray dog or a stray cat. Here, no. And I wanted to adopt a cat. I went to the shelter and the shelter told me, do you have a garden? I was like, no, not yet. I mean, I'm in an apartment. And they were like, yeah, but you know, these cats are used to be in outdoor. And I was like, yeah, but I mean, I would like to adopt one. It's, you know, usually it goes the other way around. And they're like, no, I'm sorry, if you don't have a garden, no. I thought, okay, I'm just being dismissed because I don't have a garden for a cat. I mean, I don't have a garden for myself. But then, yeah, I mean, I adopted Julio. Okay, I promised myself not to talk about Julio today because it's...
Right.
Sorry.
Oh, no problem. I think it's very interesting.
Thank you. But yeah, I adopted him from Spain. They have stray cats there. I'm not wishing for Luxembourg to have stray cats, but that's weird.
I think it's more if you live in a village that you there's more access to stray cats, or if they're living in a farm or something like that, or near a farm.
Yeah, I should have tried a farm.
But so Julio flew in.
It was driven by this association, Luxembourgish association, that, you know, think about people like me that do not have a garden. You know, I'd find cats and dogs that would like to be adopted nonetheless. And yeah, it's a very nice cat.
Is the house cat or?
Yeah, definitely a house cat. No. If you show him a garden, he would like be. Oh. It's not working. No. No, he's afraid of everything. So fine by me.
And also afraid of heights, so he won't climb on anything. And
yeah, that's too high. He's not really athletic. So sometimes he tries to jump and it just doesn't work. You know, he jumping, no, it's like, it's a bit of a dog in a way, but less athletic. Yeah, I don't know what it is.
And how do you lock off your brain, for example?
I read science fiction.
Dune? Or?
Yeah. I'm reading Dune actually because I never read. I had the book on my. I'm a little bit of a nerd. Okay.
Yeah, you wear glasses.
Yeah. It was not that hidden.
Not that.
Yeah, I know. But no. But when I was a kid, it was The Lord of the Rings. It was not science fiction, but you know. Fantasy, you name one. I mean, how is it called? Like oh my God, Blade Runner, the book from Blade. Yeah, whatever. I mean, really.
So more into the fantasy genre or everything? Also the Marvel stuff? And
No, Marvel. No, when I was a kid, I used to love the, X-Men. But the old one, you know, like they were dark. They were not. I loved them too. But then when I saw the movies, I'm like.
And the theme song is great from the old X-Men.
Yeah, I don't remember the theme song though.
Well, I'll show it later.
Yeah. Okay. I don't remember. But yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I had kind of, let's say, masculine taste for a girl in Italy. Nobody was really reading or watching these things. But a little bit of a tomboy because I grew up with my brother and my cousin. And if I have to relax, I either do that or I watch the movie that usually is sci-fi or a TV series, but. I take a walk in the woods. That's why I'm really okay. I mean, I live in Bonnevoie. There is the forest there, and I love it.
You said you are watching sci-fi movies, for example. So, what is better, Star Wars or Star Trek?
Okay, this is a divisive question. You know, people can kill me if I go in one direction or the other. But you know, I'm a Star Wars fan. To me, you know, and the old ones. But I grew up with with my brother and my cousin, and the only way to make us stop fighting or shouting or whatever we would do back then was to put Star Wars or Men in Black or The Addams Family. So very weird taste, you know, for a young lady.
It was my taste.
I would go to school and try to exchange views on whatever I was watching. And, you know, my friends were like, what? What's that? No. Yeah. And they would call me Wednesday Addams, actually. Yeah. 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 No, because usually I wear black. So makes sense. It's the truth.
Ein großes Thema, das Bianca ganz wichtig ist, ist der Klimawandel. Und so kann ich auch feststellen, mit seinem Beruf und mit seinen Forschungen hat er nicht viel Zeit und trotzdem, wenn er eine freie Minute hat, kümmert er sich um die Umwelt. Sie wird eben durch Recherchen oder wenn er Artikel zum Thema schreibt, die er nur am Blog von einer Freundin publiziert hat. Wir nicht nur Bianca ist investiert, auch die EU hat sich relativ große Ziele gesetzt. Zum Beispiel soll bis 2030 55% von den Treibhausgasen par rapport zu 1990 angespült gehen. 2050 will die EU sogar klimaneutral gehen. Dazu zumindest Kommissionspräsidentin Ursula von der Leyen 2020 verkündet.
While much of the world's activity froze during lockdowns and shutdowns, the planet continued to get dangerously hotter. And we see it all around us. From houses evacuated due to the glacier collapse on the Mont Blanc, to fires burning through Oregon, to crops destroyed in Romania by the most severe droughts in decades. But we also saw nature coming back into our lives. We longed for green spaces and clean air, for our mental health and our physical well-being. We know change is needed, and we also know it is possible. The European Green Deal is our blueprint to make that transformation. At the heart of it is our mission to become the first climate-neutral continent in 2050.
Obwohl wir auf der einen Seite so gute Ziele und Initiativen haben, gehen trotzdem regelmäßig Decisionen getroffen, wo ich just denke, Leute, für was? Und das fand ich auch spannend, dem Bianca sein Video auf das ganze Thema zu sehen. Klappt der Tanz der neueste Laptop ab und denkt sich, wir sind alle gut verloren. Oder ist es doch noch ein bisschen positiv gestimmt?
I don't know. This is a tough question. It depends on the day. Sometimes I'm really gloomy and I think, oh my God, I mean, what else should we do? I mean, what else? It's so evident that we have bigger problems than everything else, you know, and we're still talking about minor things compared to climate change and global warming. Sometimes I feel like it's not worth fighting. It's not worth doing what I do because, yeah, as you said, it's not my PhD, but I came across the subjects and I felt it was something I had to do for myself, but for everybody, it's something we all should have a little bit of knowledge of what climate change is, what global warming is, not to become depressed, but to act, to demand more from governments, from the private sector, from our employees, from everyone, from ourselves as well. Sometimes on the other hand, when I see people that, you know, engage with these issues, that do something, that fight, that are willing to spend their time, you know, time that they might have given to their families, to their friends, to themselves. I feel like, okay, if they do that, you should do that too. You should start doing something. And that's why, you know, it would be easier if I hadn't detoured towards sustainable finance and wrote some articles that are really not connected with my thesis. I might not be I'm not an expert, you know, but I'm trying to acquire as much as information and knowledge I can to maybe one day be useful. Because I think in the end, research should be useful for society, for someone, but it should be at least a little bit. I don't remember the question. Yeah, I don't feel hopeless. I feel angry sometimes. And anger, to a certain extent, might be a good drive, you know? Recently I watched a TV program, an Italian TV program, shockingly. I'm saying shockingly because the level of Italian television is really low at this moment in time. That basically was on the UN Sustainable Development Goals. So it started from a legal framework, you know, but explained through music, through theater, through arts, through hard science, because there was a professor there, and he is a professor, I think, in evolutionary philosophy, but he has also a degree in biology, and he invited people from economics, from philosophy, from, I don't know, physics, and explained to the layman what climate change is, what's wrong with climate change, why do we have climate change in the first place, and it was something accessible to everyone. And actually made me understand a lot of things that I was missing, because you cannot have the time and the brain to understand everything. You need interconnection, and you need, you know, hard sciences, social sciences, art, music to connect, to inspire people before giving them all this dreadful information of, you know, our kids might have this climate, this tropical climate, might not have water, might not have food. Because if you do that, people just might give up. You should first inspire them towards change, in my opinion. Sometimes I think it's normal to feel down about it, and it's good. But I think that as a researcher, we research in academia. I mean, we have the little bit, the moral duty to try to convey our research in an in an accessible way, and to think about the social impact that we have, that we might have, that our research might have. So I don't know whether it gives you.
Yeah, it's great.
Normalerweise frage ich mich auch am Schluss vom Podcast immer, was steht als nächstes und war das dein nächste große Projekt? Aber für ein Gespräch mit Bianca hatte ich mich mit einem guten Kollegen getroffen. Und wir haben vorhin darüber gesprochen, wie wir es dann an den letzten 10 Jahren vielleicht, ohne dass wir es gemerkt haben, charakterlich verändert haben. Und die Gedanken, die ich am Anfang so spannend fand, dass ich dann auch Bianca gefragt habe. Wie wird hat sich an 10 Jahren von Bianca von Haut unterschieden?
I would like to be someone that does something that makes a sense for the society. I would really, 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 really want to do something that makes, that has an impact, a positive impact, even if it's little, even if it's not, you know, I'm not changing the world, but I would like to contribute to, for instance, for me right now is climate change, mitigating it, to do advocacy, to do something that helps, because maybe this was not something I used to think. You know, I was more self-centered, and I think it's normal because the moment you're facing, you have the time to dig into things like this, like climate change. You understand that we don't matter as much that you think maybe we do, but we should matter in terms of. As a community, that I wanted to say, as a community. And if you think that, if you start thinking that, maybe your idea of career, of yourself changes. And I think it changed a lot in this 4 years. And I think I want to be someone that takes herself less seriously, but at the same time does something that is good for the others. I don't want to sound too, you know, goody-goody or ideological, but I think it, you know, we all should do some, even if it's just, starting from switching from plastic to glass, whatever, start doing that. It's a pattern. It's again, a work in progress. But I would like to do this as a job, even if it's research, I would like to do that in this way, I think.
Would you describe yourself as ambitious?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm not pretty sure I like the word ambitious because it's charged with both positive and negative meanings. I think I'm demanding, like I demand a lot from myself because I know that if I don't give the maximum I can in some circumstances, not in everything, but in some circumstances I will surely not be satisfied with myself. So I think I'm driven by something that is mine and mine alone rather than external recognition. I'm not sure whether being ambitious is just this or you have to be, you know, you have to crave for, I don't know what is, but like status or I don't really much value that, but I value that at the end of the day, I know that I'm satisfied with myself, with what I did. Maybe I'm not satisfied, then, you know, we have tomorrow and you can improve whatever it, you know, you're not happy with. But yeah, I've always been like that, I think, since a young age. And I think it's good because in a way it's like knowing yourself. It might also be not healthy because sometimes you have to be careful, not being too strict with yourself and not being, you know, too demanding. But growing up, I think I managed to arrive at a good balance. Sometimes it goes in a little bit in one direction rather than the other, but yeah, I don't know whether I would say that I'm ambitious. I would say that I'm driven. That, yes.
There were all my questions.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I hope you had some fun. And yeah, if you have something to say to our listeners, then you have the last words.
Okay. So, you know, apologies if I said stuff that are not really research-like. And I hope you enjoy this this podcast, this amazing, you know, initiative. And nothing. I hope you enjoyed it and I didn't bore you to death.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Das war es von das Episode von Mein Element. Vielmals merci und Bianca. Und ich hoffe, ihr schüttet genauso viel Gefallen wie mir. Wenn ihr den Podcast unterstützen wollt, dann abonniert gerne, teilt mit Freunden und Familie. Wir hören uns. Ciao.